You're listening to DeBears Brothers podcast and postgame show, the place where Bears fans across the globe hang out online after every Bears game. Now get ready, because it's time to bear down. Welcome back, Bears fans, to another episode of the Bears Brothers Podcast. This is your host, Will DeWitt, and I hope that you and yours had a great holiday weekend. Personally, it was a nice, relaxing one with the family, and I'm eager to get back on the game week grind. It's now week 13. I know, the year's just flying by. And this week, our Chicago Bears will go ahead and take on the New York Giants, who are 3-8 and fresh off a 25-22 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, just like we start every week, it's time to meet our opponent. So to help us become more acquainted with the Giants, I sat down with Matt Lombardo, the Giants beat reporter for the Star Ledger and NJ.com. Matt also hosts a New York Giants podcast called Talk is Cheap. So trust me, Matt knows his stuff, and you're going to learn a ton about this week's opponent from him. So here we go. Let's get right into that conversation. Hey, Matt, I just want to thank you again for taking the time to join us this evening to talk about the New York Giants. I want to know, how have you been?
I'm great. Hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving, and hopefully this game will give the Bears a little bit of a challenge on their way to what I think could be an NFC North title this year.
Well, hey, from your word, from your mouth over to God's ears on that one, no doubt about it. Hopefully that all comes to fruition here in Chicago. But I see some similarities here between Chicago in terms of the head coaches, right? Both of them being first-year head coaches. You guys have Pat Shurmur, and technically he's not a first-year head coach. I know he did was the head coach of the Browns earlier in this decade, but obviously with a 3-8 record, things aren't playing out, well, at least early. I want to know, how would you assess Shurmur throughout his first 11 games as head coach?
Yeah, and you look at the Andy Reid coaching tree, Matt Nagy comes from Andy Reid's lineage, as does Pat Shurmur. So you look at these two guys, and I think there are some similarities in terms of maybe their football upbringing. But I look at Pat Shurmur this year, and I think that it's really been a work in progress for this entire Giants organization, especially on offense, right, which is Pat Shurmur's forte. You look at the offensive line, they've started 9 different offensive linemen throughout the course of this year. Patrick Omame and Eric Flowers both started the year at right guard and right tackle. They've since been released. Both reunited with the Jacksonville Jaguars, by the way. So that's an interesting tidbit. But the Giants, I think, have stumbled on maybe their best offensive line combination so far with Spencer Pulley and Jamon Brown, who they picked up off waivers off the Rams. And they're starting to get, you know, their feet underneath them. But Saquon Barkley has been the star of the show for this team. He's third in the league in all-purpose yards from scrimmage, has 12 touchdowns, which is already a Giants rookie record. So this team, as Pat Shurmur said at the start of the year, was going to go as far as an offensive line could block for them. And we've seen that hasn't been very far. And I think that Saquon Barkley is a foundational building block. But this is a team that, in terms of the talent on offense, is far from a finished product. And I think they still have to eventually, sooner rather than later, address the quarterback position, because Eli Manning at times, I think, has held this team back.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking, and one thing that really stood out to me when I was scouting the Giants earlier this week was you guys lost 6 of those 8 losses have been decided by one score or less, and that's something that we've had here in Chicago over the last couple of years, always being on the wrong side of close games. You may have already alluded to it, but I have to ask, why are the Giants losing the close ones?
Yeah, I think that it comes down to they've had slow starts throughout the course of the year. The last two games against the Buccaneers and the Eagles are kind of the aberration, where they drove down the field and both of their first drives of those two games were capped by Saquon Barkley touchdowns. But before that, Eli Manning, through the first 8 games, only had, I believe it was 11 touchdowns, and only 5 of those came before the final 5 minutes of a game that was already decided by 10 points or more. And the Giants really were picking up stats, yards, and points in garbage time. They've just had slow starts. They haven't been able to develop any sort of momentum underneath them offensively. There wasn't a whole lot of balance in terms of the game plan. And you look at the last 2 weeks, and the common denominator is they've committed to the run game early and often, Saquon had a career-high 27 carries for 142 yards against Tampa Bay. Last week, he was averaging 9.5 yards per carry against the Eagles, over 100 yards again in that game. So I think that these close games, good teams find a way to win those games, and bad teams or non-competitive teams, they're either playing catch-up late and they pick up garbage yards and garbage points, or they just find a way to lose them. And so far this year, at least through the first half and a little bit more of the season, the Giants have been in that latter category where they just haven't found a way to win those games.
Now, I've already talked about Saquon Barkley a little bit. I'm curious about his rookie season because I've enjoyed having him on my fantasy team. I need to just let that out there. He's been a blessing to have on my team. But I'm curious about what he brings to the Giants offense week in and week out, because I see the 1,300 total yards. But I've also heard some rumblings, and I think you've actually wrote something about this, that there are just some issues with getting him more involved late in games. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I look at Saquon Barkley, and full disclosure here, I'm a Penn State season ticket holder, and I've seen every one of Saquon Barkley's plays dating back to college, and he went to high school across the street from my high school. So I followed Saquon Barkley's career fairly closely. You look at this Giants team, and I think that through the first half of the season, the first seven or eight games, I don't think Pat Shurmur and the offensive coordinator Mike Shula really understood the threat that Saquon Barkley is catching the ball out of the backfield. Everybody knows what he can do as a runner. Everybody knows what he can do in terms of busting out a 50 or 60 yard play that can turn the tide of a game. But you look at him as a receiver, and he's averaging upwards of, I believe, close to 11 yards per reception. And one of the reasons why he's 30 yards from scrimmage is because he's such a threat catching the football. You can line him up in the slot. You can throw it to him on wheel routes, on screens in the flat. And every time he touches the ball, he's a threat to score because of what he's able to do either after the catch or after he makes defenders miss. So I look at Saquon Barkley, and you look at the Giants' success the last couple of weeks. I don't think that it's a coincidence that he's had four games where he's touched the ball more than 18 times, and the Giants have won three of them. So if you're the Giants and you're looking to win the football game, you commit to the running game, you commit to Barkley, and you really use the passing game to supplement what he's able to bring and take some of the pressure off of Eli Manning, who has been prone to making some mistakes throughout the course of the season.
Sure. Now, looking over at your receiving core, I see Odell Beckham Jr. He leads the team in receptions with 74 and 5 receiving touchdowns, and he's averaging 92 yards per game, which is, you know, a very nice number to have. And I know he's a matchup problem each and every week, but outside of him, and like you mentioned, Barkley coming out of the backfield, I'm having a hard time finding someone to kind of worry about, especially with the Bears' very strong secondary. But over to you, is there anyone else besides OBJ and Barkley that we should worry about on that New York Giants offense?
Yeah, it's kind of inexplicable what's happened over the last couple of weeks here. You have Evan Engram, who is a former first-round pick at tight end, and he's basically a big slot receiver. Not that great of a blocker, and that seems to have really stuck out to this coaching staff. And we've seen his snaps diminish each of the last 3 weeks, played 36 snaps on a Monday night win against the San Francisco 49ers, and had a really clutch catch and a big moment on Eli Manning's comeback drive to win the game in the fourth quarter. And then last week against Tampa Bay, he only played in 30 snaps, and he had another big catch on the final drive of the game to help put the victory on ice, but he didn't play against the Eagles because of what the team is calling a hamstring injury. But he's really, his role has diminished throughout the course of this season. He's not the threat that he once was in this offense. And outside of Odell Beckham Jr. and Saquon Barkley, even someone like Sterling Shepard, who I think is one of the premier slot receivers in the league based on talent, the Giants have utilized him less and less and less. So, I mean, you can talk about Corey Coleman and his explosiveness as a kick returner, but he hasn't really brought that much to the offense as a complementary piece to Odell Beckham Jr. And I think that if you want to take away the Giants' offense, if you want to limit what they're able to do, you take away Saquon Barkley and you make Eli Manning beat you, because as you pointed out, other than Odell Beckham Jr., there aren't a lot of weapons in that passing game.
Absolutely. And you already talked about the offensive line and how it's been in flux all season long. And obviously, it's been a pain point, too. And they're tied for the most sacks giving up on the season with 38. Their Pro Football Focus's third worst pass blocking unit in the league. 170 pressures given up so far this year. And they've been susceptible to giving up pressure along the edges. And you talked about the new line kind of being a little bit stronger than the previous kind of, you know, iterations of it. But still, I want to know, what's been some of these issues up front and your thoughts about the matchup against a Khalil Mack-led Bears front seven?
Yeah, there's a running bet in the Giants press corps about the over-under on the amount of sacks that Khalil Mack will get on Sunday. I've officially set the over-under at 4.5 for Khalil Mack, especially if he lines up against Chad Wheeler, who has been the right tackle ever since Eric Flowers was benched before week 3 and then later released. Chad Wheeler, I think, is a liability at right tackle. Nate Solder was off to a really difficult start to the season. He was made the highest paid offensive lineman in the league when the Giants brought him in as a free agent from the Patriots. But I think Solder has played serviceable or better the last 2 or 3 games. Will Hernandez, their second round pick at left guard, one of the few bright spots along that offensive line. Pro Football Focus consistently has him as one of the top 10 offensive guards in the league. So Hernandez is a guy to keep an eye on in terms of a run blocker and pass protector. But if you're looking at the winner of this matchup along the front seven and along the line of scrimmage, I give a strong advantage to the Chicago Bears because of what Khalil Mack is able to do. I think he's a game breaker. I think that he's a guy who can turn the outcome of a game on its head. J.J. Watt had 2.5 sacks against the Giants in Chad Wheeler's first start, and everybody thought Wheeler played well. I think there's a legitimate chance that Mack could come close to doubling or even exceeding that on Sunday. I think this could be a really long afternoon for Eli Manning.
Well, music to my ears. Real quickly, you just talked about Manning, and that's the next question I had up here for you. I want to know how you would assess his season, because number-wise, he's kind of middle of the road, but he is 10th in yards, only 14 touchdowns. But I'm curious your take on Eli this year, because from my perspective, outside of New York, it does appear like his time may be coming to a close sooner rather than later. The fan base is kind of looking for something new. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that's – I don't know that the fan base is looking for something new, but I think the Giants would be doing themselves a disservice if they don't start looking for something new at quarterback. Listen, I think Eli Manning has done some nice things this year, and he's made a couple of nice plays, and his game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers was almost perfect. He was 20 of 21 passing, over 300 yards, a couple of touchdowns in that game. But again, they relied on Saquon in that game and the running game pretty heavily. He's also made some inexplicable throws. His interception at the end of the first half against the Eagles, I put up a tweet about this at Matt Lombardo NFL with the video. He has two receivers who were open underneath, but he tries to force it over the middle deep to Odell Beckham and just didn't have enough on the ball, and Malcolm Jenkins picked it off. That's the type of thing that he's done all year. It's really been inconsistent, his ability to hit on the deep ball with Odell. And there have been opportunities, whether it's down near the goal line, not seeing Odell Beckham wide open against the 49ers, throwing to the wrong target in a two-point conversion against the Atlanta Falcons, throwing to the wrong target on a two-point conversion against the Eagles when you had a tight end breaking free. His decision-making has just been suspect, and I think that his numbers have been inflated in the first half of the season by what he's done late when the game is already decided. So it wouldn't surprise me if sometime over these final 5 games the Giants wind up playing fourth-round rookie Kyle Lauletta, seeing what he has, because this is a team that's going to be picking in the top 5 again. And they have to know if Lauletta can be their quarterback of the future, or if they have to draft Will Greer out of West Virginia or Justin Herbert out of Oregon or Haskins out of Ohio State. They need to know what they can do with that first-round pick. Do they have to take a quarterback, or can they go get one of these potentially generational pass rushers? So to me, with the Giants at 3-8, virtually eliminated from the postseason, I wouldn't be surprised if this game against the Bears is one of his final starts in a Giant uniform.
Yeah, that's what I was reading. That's what kind of really took me, you know, by a little bit of surprise reading that so far this season. But you make a lot of good points into why that would be a wise decision for the Giants to kind of go ahead and make. But I want to switch the focus over to the Giants defense. And something that's quite noticeable about that unit is the fact that they've been unable to close game. Blew a 17-point lead against Tampa Bay 2 weeks back, and they gave up 11 points in the fourth quarter on Sunday to the Eagles. I know, and this is something else, I saw that you published an article on this, so I'm very intrigued to learn more. What have you noticed from this defense that may explain why they're unable to hold up down the stretch?
Yeah, I think it comes down to not being able to generate consistent pressure on the quarterback. This is a team that has, I believe, 12 total sacks on the quarterback, and there are several pass rushers, including Aaron Donald, who have more sacks than the Giants do, and I think Mack is somewhere near that area as well. It's not just getting home and getting sacks. They're not generating pressure. They're not making enough plays on third down. They commit untimely penalties, a lot of personal fouls. And I look right at a guy like Olivier Vernon, who the Giants were banking on being one of the anchors of this defense when they moved to a 3-4, moving him to a pass rushing outside linebacker spot, which was supposed to be his natural position. But no sacks the last 2 weeks, no quarterback pressures against the Eagles, only two tackles. He's been a ghost. You look on the back end, and Jarius Jenkins has given up some big plays through the air to guys like Alshon Jeffrey and Tavon Austin of the Cowboys. They just haven't made enough plays, haven't been good enough on third down, made too many penalties, and not getting after the quarterback. And I think that when you can't do any of those things, it's really tough to close out a game, because that's when teams are going to be throwing on you and playing from behind. And I think that's just been the Giants' issue the entire year.
Now, you talked about the low sack totals and the low amount of pressures that front seven has been able to generate so far this year. They do have 14 sacks through 11 games, which is the second fewest in the entire league. And obviously, that's not good nor effective for any defense. But despite those low sack totals and pressures, the Giants secondary has played, I think, admirably, considering they have the 11th lowest pass rating allowed at 90.4 and 10 interceptions to 15 touchdowns allowed. How is this possible without a pass rush? I'm very curious to hear your take.
Yeah, I think that they've been playing some young players back there with a lot to prove. Grant Haley is an undrafted rookie free agent. He's actually been their highest graded defensive player, according to Pro Football Focus, throughout the course of the season. Landon Collins is an all-pro. He's struggled covering tight ends and running backs, but he's been very good up front in terms of pressuring the quarterback a little bit, but even more so against the run. And I think that by virtue of the fact that the last couple of weeks teams have been playing from behind, like the Eagles, like the Buccaneers, teams have been throwing more, and that's created some opportunities for turnovers. Alec Ogletree had a pick six 2 weeks ago against Tampa Bay. And I think that when the ball was put into trouble and harm's way by the opposing quarterback, that there is talent back there, like Collins, like Janoris Jenkins, and like Haley, who can make a play on the ball and come up with some of those interceptions.
Now, I also want to know, has there anything offenses have done that you've noticed, like a trend that perhaps has given that secondary some fits this year?
You know, I haven't really noticed anything consistently, other than at times teams will go right after free safety Curtis Riley. Riley's a guy who bites on a lot of double moves deep over the top. If a guy catches a ball underneath, he's not a safety who takes really great angles to kind of close and make the tackle in the open field. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Chase Daniel or Mitchell Trubisky target Curtis Riley over the middle. I also wouldn't be surprised if you see, you go right after Janoris Jenkins on a couple of go routes with someone like Allen Robinson. I wouldn't be surprised to see that play out. But I don't know, necessarily seen many trends other than teams just seem to jump out to big leads and the Giants' defense, you know, kind of crumbles from there.
Sure. Now, that Giants run defense, too, they've given up 125 yards per game on the ground, and that's 26th in the league, and they're allowing 4.5 yards per attempt this year. Matt, I need to know, is that run defense as bad as it looks on paper?
It is, and I'll cite an example, and that was in Sunday's game against the Eagles, and the Giants were nursing a lead late in the fourth quarter. And the Eagles got the ball back, and with Corey Clement and Josh Adams, they ran a six-play drive, covered 70 yards, and they ran the ball on five of those plays. And the Giants just didn't have any answers. And I think that it just comes down to the Eagles' offensive line did a much better job than the Giants' defensive line did up front. I think this run defense has taken a little bit of a step back since they traded Damon Harrison to the Detroit Lions. I think that was more of an addition by subtraction type of move in terms of locker room culture and getting an asset for a player that you probably weren't going to be bringing back in 2019, but he was their best run stopper. I think they're still trying to find an identity in terms of stopping the run without Harrison. And you have to remember, too, that teams are also running the ball late when they get a lead on this team, and that's going to give up, you know, more rushing yards and more touchdowns late in the game.
Yeah, sure, exactly. Now, over the last three games, the Giants' defense, they've allowed the second-highest third-down conversion rate in the NFL, 51.5%. What's been behind some of the third-down struggles as of late?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's been penalties. They've had opportunities to get off the field, but they'll commit a senseless personal foul penalty, or they'll jump off sides, and that'll create a free opportunity for a fresh set of downs for the opposing offense. And I think that, you know, again, this secondary is vulnerable to giving up the big play. And for whatever reason, they just struggle to get off the field on third down. That's been a constant theme when you talk to the coaches and you talk to players on defense. It's something that they're trying to improve on as this year goes along, but just don't have any answers to, is that third down defense. So that number doesn't surprise me at all.
Now, on the converse side of this, they are the seventh best red zone defense. Is there anything that stands out as to why that defense is able to kind of step up in the red area of the field?
Yeah, I think it's that bend but don't break mentality. And that's kind of where you saw the Alec Ogletree interception against Tampa Bay. The Buccaneers were driving, and of course, Janoris Jenkins tips the ball up in the air, picks it off and runs it in for a touchdown. I think that a lot of times they get their backs against the wall, the field shortens, and they do have talent there. We talked about Landon Collins. He's an all-pro. We talked about Alec Ogletree. He's a Pro Bowl inside linebacker who is a tackles machine. And they do a nice job down in the red zone, I think, just because opposing offenses get out of their game plan and try to, do too much down in that area. And the Giants defense has been able to come up with some stops. And to be honest with you, I think that's kept them in games a lot longer than maybe they should have a couple times this season.
Yeah, sure. Matt, I've really appreciated all the insight you've brought so far. I just have a couple more questions for you. And my first one is actually just an open one. Is there anything else about the Giants, either on offense, defense, special teams, behind the scenes, that you think Bears fans should know heading into this game week?
Yeah, I think that the Giants have a chance to have an all-pro kicker in Aldrick Rosas. He's a guy that has made several kicks of 50 yards or longer. So if the Bears, even if you think you've gotten off the field or you've escaped trouble and the Giants have the chance to kick a 50-yard field goal or a 55-yard field goal try, I think Rosas is the type of guy who can, put points on the board for the Giants, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him wind up in the Pro Bowl. And the other big picture thing here is in this game that I'm going to really keep an eye on, and I think it's going to really dictate how this game plays out, is how invested is this team? You look at this past week against the Eagles. The Giants went in having won two in a row. They were up 19-3 at one point, and it just collapsed on them. Eli Manning threw an interception at the end of the first half when the Giants were up 19-11, and then all of a sudden they lost control of the game in the second half. And after the game, Odell Beckham Jr. questioned the play calling. Sterling Shepard questioned the play calling. Basically said, you guys can watch the All-22. Why don't you go back and watch it and tell me what you saw? I'm going to be really interested to see if Pat Shurmur is able to keep this team invested, keep them playing at a high level, keep them energized going into this game, because at 3-8, there's no realistic path to the playoffs. And this is a group that quit on Ben McAdoo last year. This is a group that felt, especially on defense, and the finger pointing and blaming. There were fights behind the scenes. So if the Bears jump out to an early lead, let's say they jump out and they get a 10-0 lead, a 13-6 lead, I'll be really interested to see how much fight is left in this Giants team, and also how long the Giants stick with Eli Manning. Those are really two or three things that I'm going to keep an eye on Sunday.
Great stuff there. Now, the last question is a two-parter. It's how I end every Meet the Opponent episode. And the first part of it is, what will it take for the Giants to come away with a victory this week?
They're going to have to control Khalil Mack by any means necessary, whether that's keeping tight end Red Ellison in as an inline blocker on 85% of the snaps and using fullback Elijah Penny to chip in the backfield. You can't let Khalil Mack dictate the front seven and get after Eli Manning and pressure him. And I think that they win the game if they commit to the running game and run the ball with Saquon Barkley over 25 times and he rushes for over 100 yards and scores two touchdowns. If they can do those two things, I think they have a chance to win the game.
Sure. And of course, the flip side of this question is going to be the opposite. What's going to happen in order for the Bears to win and the Giants to end up losing this one?
The game becomes a shootout. If Trubisky or Daniel, whoever winds up at quarterback, is able to put up over 27 points. And if on defense, Khalil Mack and that front seven are able to get after Eli Manning, make life miserable on him, sack him multiple times, hurry him, pressure him, all of those things. If those two things happen, it's going to be really difficult for the Giants to stay competitive.
Awesome. Great stuff, Matt. I want to thank you again for taking the time to give us some of this insight about the New York Giants heading into this game week. Real quick, is there anywhere people can find your work throughout the week if they want to kind of keep tabs on the Giants?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Lombardo NFL, and you can read me at nj.com/Giants. I have one question for you, though, my friend.
Sure. How's it going?
As a frequent visitor of Chicago for the NFL draft, and Chicago's become one of my favorite American cities, I got to ask you this question. Lou Malnati's or Geno's East?
Ooh, Lou Malnati's for sure. I'm way over Geno's
as
East.
Well, that's a good call. You're spoken like a true Chicagoan over there.
Hey, there we go. I passed your test, which I guess is all I needed for validation.
There you go.
All right, Matt, thank you again. Really do appreciate the time that you gave. I know you have a very busy schedule. You do lots of different things with radio, your podcast, writing for NJ.com, and of course, covering the Giants. So just thank you again, all right?
I appreciate you having me on.
And that's a wrap. I hope that you enjoyed Matt's insight this week and that you feel like you learned something new about the Giants. I know I sure did. Now up next, Brandon and Nick will hit your stream with their weekly audio mailbag and still answer your questions. And if you're wondering, is it too late to submit yours? Well, the answer is no, it's not. So if you want your questions answered on our next podcast by Brandon and Nick, just leave us a voicemail at 872-240-4007 with your Bears question so the guys can answer it. I'm going to talk to you later in the week with our game preview episode. But until then, bear down, Chicago. Bear down!